It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday!
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind. Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to my favorite day of the week. It is First Amendment Friday, and it's such a pleasure to be with you. I'm going to get to your phone calls and your emails, because First Amendment Friday, we open up the phone lines, and everybody gets the chance to comment. And as always, naysayers go to the head of the line. Now, frequently people say, well, Lars, you didn't let the guy or gal get a chance to make his point. I will let you make your point, but my producers always say, get your point up front. I mean, make it the first thing that comes out of your mouth, because I want your point to be out right out in front of everybody. And in a moment, I'm going to make a point about somebody I haven't talked about in a couple of months, and that is Hillary Rodham Clinton, two-time losing presidential candidate. The reason I haven't talked about her a lot lately is she's kind of a political has-been. But she said something so dirty and so disgusting an hour ago, and she said it on Twitter so that it's out in front of the whole world. I have to tell you what she said, but it is, I actually had to tweet back, you are a sorry excuse for a human being. I don't often tweet back at Hillary Clinton. Sometimes when she was still in politics, I would say something about her. But to say something so dirty and so disgusting about the deaths of human beings in this country, I just think it cannot go without some comment from me. So, welcome to the program. As always, we're going to update you every single day on where we stand with regard to coronavirus. In the United States, a total of now 94,000 people are infected with this disease, and more than 1,000 people have died. And there is a new estimate out from the University of Washington School of Medicine. They've done an estimate of where we're going to be in 4 months. Now, the estimate has a high end, the estimate has a low end, and then it has the middle ground estimate, like a lot of estimates are. When you ask somebody, what's the worst that could happen? What's the best we could achieve? And what are you expecting is likely? And that's where it gets really frightening. The University of Washington School of Medicine has released an analysis of the coronavirus or China virus that it is likely to kill 81,000 people in the United States over the next 4 months. Now, I know many people have blamed me for these numbers and said, Lars, you're scaring us with these numbers. I'm just giving you data. Now, I've got my own take on what the data means. They also point out in this study from the University of Washington School of Medicine that the high end, if we had not gone to social distancing, could have been around 162,000. The best estimate, the best case that they estimate, the best result would be a low of only 38,000 people who die from coronavirus. And as you know, 38 or 40,000 people is about the number of people who die every year from the seasonal flu. But remember, this is not an either or. We still have the seasonal flu, and the seasonal flu will still kill people in this country. The China virus is also killing people, and the University of Washington School of Medicine estimates that over the next 4 months, 81,000 people will die. This is a tough illness, but they say the death toll is unlikely to be less than 38,000 and could be as high as 162,000. The study uses data from the government, from hospitals, from other sources, and they admit that 81,000 deaths is an alarming number. Now, worldwide, what do we have? We have over 550,000 cases. In the Northwest, Oregon shows 316 infected and 11 people have died. 3,200 people in Washington state and nearly 150 deaths. In Idaho, which stayed virus-free for a long time, now at 189 people sick and 3 people who have died. The 5 states with the most cases, New York, of course, at 44,000 and more than 500 people have died. A 15% increase since yesterday. In New Jersey, almost 9,000 people have have the illness. Over 100 people have died. That is a 28% increase since yesterday. And in California, that is expected to be a trouble spot, and especially Los Angeles. 4,200 people have the illness, 85 people have died, and that is a 4% increase since yesterday. So the numbers are still increasing. But let me say a word about what Hillary Clinton had to say. Now, I know that not all of you use Twitter. I use Twitter. It is part of what I do. I combine it with what we do on the show. It is an opportunity to get information out quickly, like we did yesterday with the news that Governor Kate Brown's Department of Education had decided to put the kibosh on online education, even though online education seems like a great tool to make sure that kids still get the education they need, and they are not exposed to infection or bringing it home to members of their family. But I use Twitter to get the word out quickly. I also keep an eye on Twitter because people say things and they post information that tends to be very valuable. Not all of you do. But let me tell you what Hillary Clinton did 1 hour ago. And I want to tell you, if you say, are you sure that's Hillary Clinton saying it? There's a thing called a blue check mark. And if you're on Twitter, if you have a blue check mark next to your name, it means you are the Hillary Clinton. And this one is a blue check mark comment in which she posted a New York Times story that says the U.S. now leads the world in confirmed coronavirus cases. And then the subhead is, following a series of missteps, the nation is now the epicenter of the pandemic. And I'm sure that the rest of the story probably blames President Trump, although people seem to forget that he was the first government official to actually take some official action. January 31, a flight ban on Chinese nationals coming into the United States, and steps that had been taken by his government agencies in early January to offer help to China, who then lied to us. China lied and people died. What did Hillary Clinton say above this story that says the U.S. now leads the world in confirmed coronavirus cases? She said these words: he did promise America first. He did promise America first. Now, whose slogan is that? That would be the slogan of Donald Trump. She doesn't actually have to say President Donald Trump. The he did promise America first makes it very clear that Hillary Clinton, from her official Twitter account, has mocked the president of the United States and mocked the deaths of Americans, where we now lead the world in the number of people who are ill and in some cases dying from coronavirus. And Hillary Clinton thought this was a good place to comment. As I said, I commented back, and I don't usually answer back to her, but I said, you are a disgusting excuse for a human being. Jack Prosobiec, who's been on this show, said, not the first time that you've laughed as Americans died. And Larry O'Connor says, and to think people thought you were cold, cruel, and only cared about your craven political ambitions. But here you show some real, genuine empathy at a time when your own state is in the grip of a deadly pandemic. Good for you. Of course, he's being sarcastic. Hillary Clinton making the comment, he did promise America first, as though this China virus is because of Donald Trump. Actually, Donald Trump is the first person to really give a meaningful response early on in this epidemic to say we don't want it in our country and we'll do what we have to do to keep it out, including a flight ban, for which he was called xenophobic and racist and every other name in the book. Anyway, it's First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your comments. We've got the Northwest Nonsense coming up and a little celebration for one member of our Lars Larson Show team. We'll get to that in just a moment. And whether or not Northwest governors should side with kids and their education or the labor unions that fund the campaigns of those politicians, I'll get to that in the Nonsense coming up next on the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show on FM News 101 KXL.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Northwest governors refuse to let children get in the way of their loyalty to labor unions. Consider more More than a month ago, Shoreline Schools near Seattle put 23,000 students on online learning, driven by the China virus. Now, that was an early and smart decision. And then Governor Jay Inslee closed the schools, including online learning. Pretty dumb, Jay. Governor Kate Brown closed the brick-and-mortar schools, but online schools serving thousands of students assumed that they would stay in business. And then my colleagues at Willamette Week broke the story yesterday. Online schools perfectly designed to protect students, well, they are on the closure list as well. Now the Brown administration is scrambling to spin the story. Of course you can keep operating, but only if you extend services to all. The problem is, as former state representative Jeff Krupp explained to me last night, the online school he's been helping out has taken on 300 new students in recent weeks. They have 1,600 more waiting to get in right now. And Brown's education czar, Colt Gill, has to approve it, and he has not done so. Teachers' unions know that if parents and students get a taste of the high quality and the safety and the convenience of online schooling, they might not come back to the bricks and mortar. And if they stay away, so do the dollar signs that school administrators see attached to the forehead of each one of your children. Labor unions know that, and union sock puppets like Governor Brown know it as well. And I want to tell you that I'm getting emails from parents right now. Let me read you two of them. Because the education department is trying to say, well, no, we're not really affecting the online education. We're not trying to get in the way. We want the kiddies educated as well. I think that is a pile of Bernie Sanders, as far as I'm concerned. Sherry writes in, Lars, my grandson was supposed to graduate this year. Even though he has the credits to graduate, it's doubtful he will graduate with the school shut down. He told me there are no online classes for Roseburg High. And then I got this one from Kevin, and this goes right to the point that Willamette Week was making in the story they broke, and I give full credit to Rachel Monahan for making that story happen. Lars, today my wife received notice from the Connections Academy that our two children were approved for their program. Shortly after we got the message from them that our kids could not be accepted because of the governor's decision to not allow any new enrollments to online charters. It is infuriating that the Oregon government has decided that they know better than my wife and I about what is best for our kids. My kids will fall behind because our governor is bowing down to the teachers' union. It is totally disgusting. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, I thought I would award today's Daily Grill to the free bus rides. As pointed out by Steve in Bellevue, of course, Metro, the big bus system in Seattle, said, we're going to stop charging people. And he says, Lars, in King County right now, there's no charge to ride a Metro bus. Bus rides are free for everybody in King County. The front doors of the buses are closed to protect the drivers. That's sensible. Everybody enters the back doors who wants to ride for free. And since the buses are nice and warm and dry inside, the homeless people are taking over and going for free rides and won't get off the buses. Oh my God. Downtown Seattle is going to eventually end up as a hellhole. You and your wife take care, Steve in Bellevue. And then this one. This is, you know, you thought Hillary Clinton was bad. This isn't as bad as Hillary Clinton mocking the president during a time when Americans are sick and in some cases dying. This is Representative Paul Holvey, who's a Democrat from Eugene. He's co-chair of the legislature's Joint Special Committee on Coronavirus Response. And in a committee meeting 2 days ago, when he heard about the governor's plan to put off the filing deadline for taxes in Oregon, which was a sensible decision, she came to it way too late, but they pushed it back from April 15th to July 15th. And what did Paul Holvey, Democrat of Eugene, say? That's a huge cash flow problem, which probably takes many of the items we want to help with off the table, I'm afraid. His comments drew a strong response from Senator Tim Knope from Bend, a Republican who I agree with in this case, although not in all cases. Cash flow problems? Really? The government just shut down about 90% of the businesses in the state of Oregon who now have massive cash flow problems, and the whole reason to delay the filing and payment is for them to be able to catch up. So for the government to, at this point, claim poverty or claim cash flow problems after what we've done to business, quite frankly, just seems incredibly hypocritical. And now today's best email. But you can always send more. This one I took the name off of. Lars TriMet, which is the Portland Transit Agency, preaches safety first. With that being said, I've asked my chain of command why TriMet is still conducting new hire training, putting new students and trainers at risk by putting them on the bus with the general public. We don't know if people who are riding the system are or have been exposed to coronavirus, putting all of them and their families at risk. If safety is a priority, they should have postponed a new hire class that started this last Monday. And I don't know much about driving buses, but I think he's absolutely right. Now, we do have an important moment to mark on the 27th of March today, and it's a birthday. Yeah, that's right. It's a birthday for a member of my team, and I want to recognize this in particular because Mackenzie Prunty, who came to me a couple of months ago, I mean, before we knew how bad this was going to get, and she said, I'd like to take the day off so I can be with my sweetie on my birthday. And I said, that is perfectly all right. You take Friday, the 27th of March, off. You go right ahead. Well, coronavirus got in the way. And we wanted to wish a happy birthday to Mackenzie Prunty on her birthday, even though it has to be spent at home working to help me make this show great. And because it's the China virus that has done this, we've got another treat for you, the Chinese version. Happy birthday to Mackenzie Prunty. Because we don't inquire about the age of young ladies, we won't tell you how old she is, but she's very young. In any case, Mackenzie, thanks for all the hard work you do on the show. So far, we've compared notes. Who's getting their birthday plans messed up by this at the Lars Larson Show? Well, Mackenzie is for sure. Donovan Sargent, the executive producer, is for sure. Bryce Wells, who is sitting in the studio today, the only guy at the studio today to keep him safe and everybody else safe, his birthday plans have been messed up by this. And of course, mine were earlier in this month. But we're all having birthdays, and we will mark them down on our calendars as that was the year our birthday plans got interrupted by coronavirus. It could have been a lot worse, and for a lot of people out there, it is. And for an awful lot of people out there, we appreciate the hard work that you're doing, staying on the job. Police officers, firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, doctors, nurses, medical techs, all the people who work in the hospitals and the clinics, all the lab techs and everybody else, thank you so very much for your extra efforts because we know that you're on the front lines and you are putting your own health and safety at risk, and we deeply appreciate it. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are coming up next at 866-439-5277 on the Lars Larson Show. Show. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, which means we reach out to every corner of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And especially during times like this, we got to think about how to help everybody out in the community. I'm sure we will find new ways. There is that new study out of UW in Seattle that says China virus is going to kill likely 81,000 in America over the next 4 months. We are seeing, though, that there are American companies that are stepping up to help out, stepping up and offering their services. And I've seen so many offers of generosity out there. But a lot of the focus of this story seems to be on the big cities like New York City. And of course, Andrew Cuomo and his daily one or two hour show on Fox News and CNN, in which he doesn't really communicate a lot of information, but he complains about a lot of things. And then there's Seattle. Seattle was the first epicenter of coronavirus. And we're also seeing that there are some other big cities around this country that are likely to get hit. So the focus has not been so much on the small towns. And I thought we'd reach out to one small town, the town of Monmouth, and see what's being done there. Cece Kuntz joins me now. Cece is the mayor of Monmouth. Mayor Kuntz, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars.
I understand your small town has done a number of things to try to accommodate the different needs of a community, a small town, as all of this is going on around us.
Yes, well, actually, Monmouth and our sister city, the city of Independence, because we share not only a border, we share a school district, we share a fire department, and many other services. Our two cities have worked very closely, and our additional partners, not only the fire department and the central school district, but our major employer in the community is Western Oregon University, which, of course, has also been greatly affected by this. We are working together, basically meeting twice a week and communicating daily about all of the different needs from individuals and businesses to our own agencies. So quite a coordinated effort going on out here in Polk.
Mayor Koontz, what are the particular challenges that hit a small town differently than, say, some of the big cities of the Northwest?
Well, I was on a call this morning, all of the cities of Polk County, which includes part of Salem, so we have a good judge of what's going on in a much larger city than ourselves. Our major challenge in the small cities is just small staffs. Our ability to create, public relations campaigns or to staff emergency operations is much more limited. We have, for example, a city that only has two certified water technicians on its staff, has to keep them both healthy in order to keep a water system operating. So some of those very, very obvious challenges in emergency situations.
When you don't have a team that's all that deep, everybody's got to be front and center to make sure that things get done. Now, do you know whether you've had any cases of coronavirus in your community yet?
Yesterday, Western Oregon University announced that one of its students who had traveled to the Spokane area in late March or mid-March has been diagnosed positive COVID-19. That student, as Western announced, lives off campus, is recuperating at home. That's the only announced one that's actually living locally that I know of.
If the rest of the state, you've got the whole region listening to you right now, for all the small towns out there, we made a request early on in the week saying it really didn't make much sense for thousands of people to go to the recreation areas of the Northwest, like Central Oregon, Eastern Washington, the beach, whether it's Oregon or Washington, that really put an extra strain on those small towns and their grocery stores and that sort of thing. If there was one request you could make of the rest of the region, what would you like them to do to help you out?
I think everybody just needs to take this very seriously. Obviously, Western Oregon is shut down. We will not be having students come back this spring at all. So our major sort of destination is closed down, although we do have about 100 students who either can't return home or are providing essential functions, so they're still on campus. I think the main thing we need to do is honor each community's requests and take this seriously. There will be, I know there's a lot of discussion and debate about, for example, the kinds of assistance and supports that are coming from our state and federal government, but we need to be prepared to work together to get through this and support our small, tiny businesses in our small towns, as well as some of us have one major employer, for example, the university. And these are going to be hard-hit institutions that will change the future of our small communities. However, those of us who are considered rural Oregonians are pretty resilient and pretty tough, and we're going to figure out a new way forward working together.
Mayor Koontz, good luck to you, and God bless. Thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you, Lars.
That is Mayor Cease Koontz, who is the mayor of Monmouth, Oregon. Monmouth and Independence, of course, kind of sharing a border jointly. Let's go to your calls now. I've got plenty of things to say today, but I want to hear what's on your mind as we head into this. Let's start out with Cheryl, who's calling in from Astoria, listening on KAST. Cheryl, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I'm a
a small business owner. I own a hair salon, 10 employees total. It's a fairly large payroll for a small business. But shutting me down, I, of course, didn't pay into unemployment tax for myself. My employees obviously get unemployment insurance. But I did have insurance on my place of business for loss of income, loss of, in case of fires, floods, things that were going to shut me down. But now insurance companies are discouraging us from even trying to file a claim or to even look into our policies. And I would think this would be the first way for our governments is to mandate these insurances to pay off these small businesses. And that would instantly put cash flow back into our hands.
You know, Cheryl, I've already heard from some businesses who say that the business interruption insurance, isn't that the term for it?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, that many of the policies, in the same way that a lot of policies of a lot of kinds of insurance exclude terrorism, acts of war, things like that, that unfortunately they also exclude things like epidemics. I don't know whether yours does or not, but if you have an insurance policy and it spells out that you do get paid if your business is interrupted, why would the government need to order your insurance company? Don't you just say to your insurance company, I'm filing a claim. We've had a loss. Here's the claim. Here's my insurance policy. And they have to pay. Now, if the insurance policy you bought doesn't include pandemics or epidemics, should the government order those insurance companies to pay for something that the insurance policy doesn't cover?
That's unforeseen, that none of us predicted. I think we're writing laws as we speak right now just because of this was unprecedented to our world and to our businesses. I feel like restaurants have legal representation. School districts have their unions. Our small little independent hair salons really have nobody but the insurance companies that they relied on.
And has your insurance company told you your policy does not cover this?
At this point in the game, I've just now gotten through to my insurance underwriter that will be sending me somebody for a claim. So I'm going to turn in a claim regardless and see what happens.
Well, I hope that it does pay off, but I've just been told a lot of the policies do not cover loss of business because of an epidemic. It's one of the policy exclusions. And the last thing I want to do is see the government walk in and say, the policy doesn't cover that, but we're going to make you cover it. I don't think that would be the right thing for government either. I have to be honest with you. Cheryl, thank you for the call. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Tonight.
Another great American idea forced upon us by the government to take more of our money and give them control. They are the unions. Now to expose them and break them to pieces, here's Lars Larson.
Actually, I think in most cases, the unions do themselves dirty, like their actions to try to keep online charter schools from operating and taking on new students. But this is a different matter. One of the unions is not exactly my favorite. The ones in purple shirts, the SEIU, stands for Service Employees International Union. They represent a lot of people. They are a rather large union, almost 100,000 members who work in hospitals around California. Well, guess what the SEIU says? They just found 39 million of those now famous N95 face masks, and they will be facilitating the sale. They're acting as a broker. Get this. The union launched a search for masks and protective equipment. Did they find these in the back of a warehouse owned by the SEIU? No. They found a potential supplier who has 39 million masks. Now, you might think, in that case, the union should just call up the hospitals, call up the state government where you are, maybe even call the federal government and say, hey, this supplier can supply 39 million of these masks. And they found another supplier who says his company can produce 20 million of the N95 masks. Now, if you know, if you go to a store, if they still have any of these N95 face masks available, like Home Depot, they're going to tell you they're about $1.20 each. So guess what the very generous folks at the SEIU have decided to do? Did they dig deep into their bank accounts at the union, which are usually pretty fat from the dues of their members? No. They said, we will sell the masks to states, counties, and hospitals for $5 a pop. Now, that's only a markup of 400%. I hope if the SEIU and its union members decide to pull this kind of nonsense, I hope that all the people who usually talk about coming down on gouging go after them big time to say they don't even own the masks. They're just being the broker, and they're saying we'll buy them from the supplier for maybe $1 or $2 a piece, and we'll sell them to states, counties, and hospitals for $5 a pop. That's the union for you. In any case, glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails. I want to roll out our Twitter poll question today. You can find two places to answer it. One is at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. The other is on our website, LarsLarson.com. Should Oregon's governor immediately send out kicker checks in this emergency? As you know, the kicker is in the Constitution. It says if the state government estimates its budget needs for the two-year period and then they collect more in taxes than they actually need to pay that bill, they send the excess back to the taxpayers if they collect more than 2% over their estimate. It's a little complicated, but every once in a while we get a kicker check. Well, a kicker check is due. They used to actually send out an actual check. And then they said, oh, it'd be easier for us if we waited a few more months and hung on to the money and then sent it back with your tax refund. I think in a case like this, when people are hurting financially, Oregon's Governor Kate Brown could say to the legislature, which they're talking about calling in special session, why don't we just send all that money out right now? It'll cost us about $1 million to write the checks. I think they have over $1 billion that is due back to Oregon taxpayers. Send that money out right now. And if Kate Brown says, no, we don't want to send the money back, just understand, she's always wanted to put her hands on that money. Let's go to Doug in Sutherland. Hey, Doug, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind on this First Amendment Friday?
Hey, good afternoon. Hey, there was a commentary, Danielle Sittel, S-I-T-T-E-L, on Google. In her 1387 WordPress says, blur out all the other lines. I'm in a forced marriage. Obtaining me is easy as...
I have no idea what Doug is talking about, but he apparently lied to my producers. So when you lie to the producers, you get your call bounced, and then you get banned from the show. But thanks very much. If you wanted to get a commercial, you should talk to our sales department. Let's go to James in Long Beach. Hey, James, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. All right, at my job where I work, I'm not going to name it because we're not supposed to.
Okay.
But what I want to go ahead and do is we're all having different views of the stimulus check, how it's supposed to work. We are essential drivers. We do drive. We deliver parts to people, you know, mechanics, stuff like that.
Right. We got to keep people rolling.
Yeah, so my take is what I'm telling people at work. Tell me if I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, if you can correct me. I told them that everybody who makes less than $75,000 a year, which we all pretty much do, we're going to get each adult is going to get $1,200, up to $1,200 each, up to $3,400 in the household total, like two kids, two adults.
Yep.
And I told them they will get, and they asked, how are we going to get them? I said in about... Steve Mnuchin and Nancy Pelosi, who just spoke today, I think she mentioned, I could be wrong, but I think she said she wants it quicker than 3 weeks, direct deposit, and that's going to come from how they're going to do that. If you file taxes this year, they would use your checking account information, for example.
You have all of that is correct. As I understand it, James, everybody who makes less than $150,000 in a household, that's a husband and wife, or $75,000 as an individual, gets a $1,200 check. Above $150,000, you don't get anything. And then for every child in the household, it's another $500. For an average, for a family of four, about $3,400. And they will use, if you haven't filed your 2019 taxes, they're going to use the info from your 2018 taxes. I've had a few people say, what if I'm retired and I made no money and filed no taxes in 2018? My understanding is the checks go to people who either filed their taxes in 2018 or 2019, and they will, if you filed online, they're going to make the deposit online as well. It should be pretty quick.
This is Friday. Oh, fun and fun. First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS.
That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind.
Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, and it's a pleasure to be with you. I know that America is going through tough times. Many cities and many states are in lockdown right now. A great number of cases, and in fact, the United States now has the greatest number of China virus cases in the world. And there is a new study out from the University of Washington that suggests that in the next 4 months, we are likely to see more than 80,000 American citizens die. Even though if we had not gone into some kind of social distancing, that we might have maybe double the number of cases where somebody dies from China virus. Well, when you think about the people best suited to manage this, rock star doesn't necessarily come to mind. Many rock stars have a jet. They're used to having the right number of brown M&Ms in their dressing room or the right bright brand of bottled water available to them. But one of the people who's a rock star, and he's a good friend of the show and a friend of mine, who does not fall into that rock star category, even though he is a rock star, is the very self-reliant Motor City Madman, Ted Nugent, who joins me now. Ted, it's good to have you back.
Well, thank you, Lars. I appreciate that. And happy springtime now more than ever, I think.
Absolutely, because let's hope that this whole thing is a bit seasonal. The doctors keep telling me they don't know for sure if it's seasonal, but if... Ted, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're kind of cutting in and out, though, Lars.
I'm sorry about that. Well, we do what we can with the technology because, obviously, we're all working remotely these days, and sometimes the technology cooperates and sometimes it does not. Can you hear me now?
I do. I heard that, and that's some more truth, logic, and common sense, which is why I appreciate you having me on, because that's what you represent. That's what I represent. That's what, you know, good God, family, country, self-reliant, rugged individuals across the country represent. And those are the ones that are helping their neighbors and friends. And I see it all over here in our home state of Texas and with my sons and daughters all across the country, quite honestly. I have some Nugent family everywhere. And it's great to see such positive spirit. And those that are, you know, still practicing the be prepared of the American Boy Scout mantra, that we're the ones that are helping our neighbors and friends, and we're the ones that were most poised to listen to the great experts that Donald Trump has surrounded himself. What a great president during a dangerous time like this. So social distancing and obviously a little alert for some increased hygiene might have been in order, not in my life, but for somebody. And I think that the mitigation is moving forward, but these are scary times. I know Americans are hurting, and I think some lessons need to be learned. But you got to admit, Lars, the number one lesson that we the people have to learn is that we allowed past corrupt administrations to give our medical and antibiotic control, life and death control, to a tyrannical, genocidal, communist Chinese government. I mean, if that's not a lesson to be learned, we're doomed.
No, you're absolutely right. Sorry about the dogs barking in the background. They're warning me that there may be...
I love the dogs barking. Mine are sleeping at my feet right now.
Well, mine tend to watch outside. I've told them they should only be on watch for coronavirus, but these days they tend to bark at anybody. Somebody walking by peacefully 200 yards away, they see as a real threat to their domain. So they have a tendency to take big action when that happens. But, Ted, I agree with you. I think people should be self-reliant. And they should also have a little self-control. I mean, when I saw kids go down to spring break and say, hey, this is no big deal. I've waited a long time to go drinking in Miami or California, wherever it happens to be. And they're not realizing they may pick up something and bring it home. And while it isn't likely to hurt them as young people, it may come home and hurt mom and dad or grandma and grandpa.
Yeah, once again, more truth, logic, and common sense. But unfortunately, even though it's common in your world and my world, I mean, I've been in touch with all my sons and daughters and grandkids, my brothers, my sister, my band, my crew, my entire team, my hunting buddies, and everybody is cocked, locked, and ready to rock the Glock, Doc, and that's where the self-sufficiency, be prepared lifestyle really comes into play. But you know, Lars, I'm just a guitar player, but I've been through Michigan ice storms and blizzards. I got lost in the Manistee National Forest during the deer season in 1967, and I've learned my lessons. But isn't it a shame that after Y2K and floods and hurricanes and tornadoes and tsunamis and every other catastrophe that besets us, that so many people still haven't learned, and they scramble to go out and buy toilet paper? Let me guess. Somebody didn't have 100 rolls already prepared. So, again, I'm always looked at by the lunatic fringe as a weirdo because I'm prepared. That's why I've always supported the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. I've got fire extinguishers in my trucks and in my farm and in my barn. And I'm just, I'm a Boy Scout. I'm 71 years clean and sober. When you're clean and sober, you learn lessons from catastrophic conditions. And I hope people learn this time.
Well, I mean, Ted, you know how to hunt. I know how to hunt. And you have to prepare for different kinds of emergencies in your neck of the woods. I'm on the left coast of America, so I have to deal with the possibility of earthquakes, the possibility of power outages, the possibility of storms, even tsunamis. There was, in fact, a big earthquake in Asia a couple of nights ago, and they said tsunami alert for Hawaii. And I thought, I hope people are ready for this. But one of the entities that we're seeing is not prepared. We see major hospitals and not just cities and counties and states and the country. Apparently, we had a national stockpile of 100 million of those now famous N95 masks, but it was run down in 09, and no administration since then chose to refill the stockpile. And I think some of the private entities like hospitals that have said, oh, we've got plenty on hand. We've got a month's extra. Well, in this case, some of those hospitals have told me they've burned up their one-month supply in a matter of a week or two. So maybe their supply depot should have been a little bit deeper.
Well, you know, I'm celebrating that so many of my fellow Americans are prepared. We always celebrate the good. That's the good. And, of course, the bad and the ugly is also a reality, and those are the people that seem to be helpless and are scrambling for basic supplies on a day-to-day basis. But when our leaders, when our elected employees, whose duty it is, where their oath is to serve the people and to protect the citizens of this country, when they don't learn lessons, when the government fails to learn lessons and be prepared, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, there's medical and health emergencies right now, but again, I'll say what I said at the beginning of our dialogue just now, and that we've talked about so many times, the self-inflicted curse of apathy. Well, it's that disconnect and that non-participation by so many Americans in this sacred experiment in self-government that have allowed the criminal corruption and abuse of power and the abject failures of our government, where they put, again, I'm going to repeat it because this is lesson number one in March 2020. We put the life and death control of America's medicine and antibiotics in the hands of the Chinese government? What kind of freak does that? And I'll tell you what kind of freak does that. Power-abusing, criminally corrupt politicians have done that, and that's the lesson we better rectify. Not just stockpiling water and medicine and food and perishables and toilet paper and guns and ammo, but making sure that our elected employees live up to their job description, because
absolutely. That's Ted Nugent, the Motor City Madman, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
More of Lars now on FM News 101 KXL.
What did the Senate majority fight for? One of the largest corporate bailouts with as few strings as possible in American history. Shameful. The greed of that fight is wrong for crumbs for our families. And the option that we have is to either let them suffer with nothing or to allow this greed and billions of dollars, which will be leveraged into trillions of dollars, to contribute to the largest income inequality gap in our future. There
now,
should be
if
shame
you thought,
about what we-
if you thought that voice that you're hearing is that of, say, a middle schooler in a school debate, it's not. It's the former bartender who's likely to have to go back to her bartending job because her own party has decided to gerrymander her out of a district. That is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And by the way, while she's talking about the crumbs going to American citizens, she is one of the people who has raised the objection that the bailout or aid package, whatever you want to call it, doesn't have enough money going to non-citizens of this country. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Our Twitter poll question today. Should Oregon's governor, this one's Oregon-centric for a change, should Oregon's governor immediately send out kicker checks in this emergency? I understand. The kicker for many years was given out in the form of a check. It is the excess tax funds collected by the state of Oregon that under the Constitution must be returned under certain circumstances to citizens. And for a long time, they would send out checks. Every couple of years, you would get a check for the amount that was above 2% over collection of the state taxes to fund the state budget. Well, in this case, there is a gigantic kicker that is due to Oregonians, but only after they have filed their taxes, and that has now been pushed back to July. So my suggestion would be, if Kate Brown says that average citizens need to be able to get some help right now, then why not order that all of those dollars be sent out? They're allocated based on what you paid on your taxes. Send them out right now. I think that would be a way to put some money in people's pockets right now. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to Alan in Grants Pass, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Alan, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's up?
Thank you, Lars, for giving me a chance all these years. Something that was really important, some of these companies are wanting to give out these N95s.
Yes.
These face masks. And they said they've had them in storage for, some of them have said, for years.
Yes.
I've done hazmat for 27 years. Those masks are moderate in their coverage at best because they don't stay tight to the face. Here's their problem, though. All these ones that have been setting have elastic and rubber, the same as some of the facial pieces go along your forehead for the plastic. Foam and rubber, when they set, and that's why they have freshness states, believe it or not, they go bad, and if you wear it once and then 10 minutes later you're sweating, it falls off your face. What good has that done other than put you in harm's way? This is my point, period, is that accepting these, just like the ones the union wants to give, the, you know, $5 a piece, are they still good? Are they still fresh? And are they usable? And I would
my understanding of the union one is that the SEIU doesn't even have the masks in hand. They've merely located somebody who's manufacturing them, which probably means somebody in China. So all they're doing is brokering the deal. And I don't think they should get that kind of commission on brokering a deal. I wish they would just tell the government, these masks are available, you can negotiate for them. But it sounds like the SEIU wants to get its cut. And I take your point, although you mentioned running along your forehead. The N95 mask, the 3M variety that I've seen most commonly, are the ones that run above your nose and then below your chin, correct?
That's correct. I was referring to the shields that they're using with the foam in them.
Oh, the shields, right.
They try to make the shield part of it, and then they do, some of them putting duct tape over it, which is kind of a hard deal because you restrict your amount of airflow. But those kinds of things, rubbers and synthetics and that, if they've been sitting on the shelf or in a warehouse, even in the dark, as soon as they hit the sun, radon does its job, and it breaks it down, and it'll do it in hours. And I'm telling you that of experience of 27 years of doing full hazmat to scuba to whatever direction I had to go, you got to make sure the stuff is fresh. Just like the wipes, they'll dry out. Just like some of the other items we use, like the suits, they will crumble and fall off of you.
Well, you make a very good point. I guess, Alan, in the case of hospitals that say they're literally running out of these things, I guess in quantity you can buy those masks about 60 cents a pop if they're available. And I know there are a number of manufacturers that are ginning up additional capability, but we literally had the CDC more than a week ago saying to hospitals and nurses and doctors, if you don't have any masks anymore, tie a bandana over your face. Look, that's how desperate the situation is in some places. And if the goal for the average person, not for a doctor or nurse, is just to make sure that droplets from somebody else's sneeze or cough do not end up in your mouth or on your nose, at the very least, anything on your face makes you less likely to touch your nose or your mouth. And that may help you out. With the doctors and nurses, I'm sure at this point they would be glad for almost anything they could get. And let's hope the manufacturing capability comes up very, very fast. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Brian in Camas, Washington. Hey, Brian, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Lars. Appreciate you and value your opinion at times. Just add a ton of value to us each day. Hey, I got a question for you. I kind of wanted your take on this. I do food delivery. Okay, I've actually delivered to your house before. And I use a mask and I use gloves. And what I have found is that I would probably say 90% of the drive-thrus restaurants that I go into are A, not using gloves, or not using gloves and mask. Now, I have an autoimmune disease. I know Tina is not feeling good as well. She's, you know, subject to things that something
she's got
out,
lupus.
Right?
Yeah, she's got lupus.
I would feel, she has lupus. I would feel absolutely terrible if I picked up food coming from, you know, a lot of millennials run these little drive-thrus, right? They're not using masks. They're just kind of dinking around just like they are at the beach and they are, you know, in their little groups of cars and parking lots and things like this. And then they're going to work and they're, you know, they're putting together your Applebee's, your Taco Bell, whatever the case is. And then I'm delivering it to people and they're concerned about not coming out into public. So they're using these services to get food to them. Yet we have no way to control what's actually going on behind the drive-thru window. And I was kind of curious, like, has either the governors or the president talked about, you know, with restaurants being open, why aren't we mandating people to wear gloves and masks at all times if they're going to choose to keep their restaurant open? And if they don't have those supplies, then I guess you don't get to keep your restaurant open.
You know, you make an important point that if that entire chain isn't kept intact, all the way from the point where you take the food out of the package or out of the freezer or out of the refrigerator and put it on the grill and prepare it, if one person in that chain has the disease, it may not even be causing symptoms for them. And I think at this point, Brian, enforcement is going to be an absolutely impossible task. If you think, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it, but I think the way to do it is impress on the owners of those businesses, you don't want to hurt your customers. So could you please make sure your crew is taking those steps all the way along the way? You know, where I know that a lot of fast food workers will end up wearing gloves. They'll put on a glove to make a sandwich at a Subway shop or at a Jimmy John's. And I guess because there's no way in the world that the state at this point on short notice is going to be able to go out and inspect all these places, and you can't be there 24 hours a day. So it'd be nice to just say to the business owners, use the bully pulpit like Jay Inslee and Kate Brown. I think they have underused the bully pulpit. If they said, hey, folks, we need to make sure this entire chain stays intact, that people getting food stay safe, and that everybody along that chain understands their responsibility. Wash your hands. Wear the gloves. Be careful. Understand that a little bit of contamination for you could be a death sentence for somebody with an underlying condition or somebody who is older. It's First Amendment Friday, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show on FM News 101 KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Do you know, yesterday morning, early on, I sent out a request to the Oregon Department of Education. I wanted to get an interview. Well, at this point, they're saying, we're not giving you an interview. That usually tells me that an agency does not want to answer hard questions. And I gave you the breaking news story that Oregon and Kate Brown's Oregon Department of Education have decided to shut down online charter schools, online education. Now, as you know, online education has always been a favorite of mine, not because I have a dog in the fight. I have no children that have gone to online education. I've never used it myself. But it seems to provide great success. So you've heard about it on this show for more than 20 years, going all the way back to the original Connections Academy. And before I get to Joe Ray Perkins, who's running for Congress, I want to tell you that I reached out to ODE, Oregon Department of Education, because I wanted to do my due diligence and say to them, I understand that you are going to shut down online education. Jay Inslee did the same thing in Washington State, even though Shoreline Schools near Seattle had put 23,000 kids in online education in anticipation. They were one of the early districts to say, coronavirus is coming at us. We're going to respond by immediately emptying the buildings and putting kids on online education. And then Jay Inslee comes along and shuts them down. Well, Kate Brown has done the same. And I think that both Jay and Kate are protecting themselves politically because the teachers' associations do not like online education. It is a threat to jobs for them, even though it produces better results for kids, better results for parents, better results for taxpayers. It is better all the way around. And in this age of the China virus, it is a quick answer to say we can still educate the kids. I told you at the beginning of the show that former state representative Jeff Krupp had told me last night after I was off the show, he helps out with one of the online charter academies. And they have already taken on 300 additional students at this point in the school year because parents are desperate to make sure their kids' educations are finished. They have 1,600 more students waiting. And the Oregon Department of Education has to approve those additional kids. Well, guess what? They're going to give you a big middle finger, Oregonians. That's what they're going to do. I just got this email back from Mark Siegel, who is at the Oregon Department of Education. He identifies, by the way, he puts in his signature as he, him, and his, so we know his pronouns. He is the communications director. And he says, thanks for your email. Send me your questions, and I can be helpful. Please review this background. Can virtual public charter schools still teach their students? Yes, virtual public charter schools can still teach their students, even though virtual public charter schools are closed by executive order. They can continue to provide supplemental education and learning supports like other public schools. Now, do you know what the position of the schools has been? They actually took it about 8 days ago. And here's what they did. They came out and said this. Protecting student rights has to be front and center during the conversation about distance learning. You cannot open a brick and mortar school in Oregon unless it is accessible to every student in the school district. The same rules apply to an online school. So they're saying you can go ahead and operate, but only if you offer your services to every single student out there. Well, the fact is that effectively shuts those schools down. So I know the Wall Street Journal is working on a story about this right now. Oregon is doing a dirty trick on its students and its parents by telling parents who've been willing to be part of online education, you can't do it now, and we're not going to let other students into it because that is a threat to the teachers' union. On that note, Joe Ray Perkins joins me now, who's running for Congress. Joe Ray, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Good afternoon, Lars. I am excellent. Thank you for the opportunity to be on. And yes, I'm running for the U.S. Senate to unseat Jeff Merkley.
Jeff Merkley. And boy, I think we should have replaced this guy a long, long time ago. And you've got a long haul because you're running against an incumbent, and this is going to be a tough year for campaigning. So how do you get it done?
Well, we have to be innovative. You know, when they tell us we have to stay home, stay safe, don't be out in group meetings, that means we go digital. Do what you're doing. You work from home, and you innovate. And so, thankfully, we have the internet and all kinds of media, you know, social media ways that we can get the message out, and plus snail mail.
And what are the biggest issues you see? I mean, obviously, China virus is consuming a lot of attention right now. But if you could replace Jeff Merkley, what would you do differently for the state of Oregon?
Well, Lars, the first thing is I'm going to honor my oath of office, which clearly defines what the role of the Senate and the House of Representatives is. And clearly our bureaucracy is too big. It's, in my opinion, unconstitutional to have the number of agencies that we have, which drains our income because somebody's got to pay all those salaries and all the overhead. And so that's the first thing, is that I'm going to make sure that every bill that I look at as a senator is absolutely constitutional. It has to be. We've got to start getting back to what the Constitution says the role is, and that's to have a smaller federal government. So to answer the question, my goal is going to be to reduce the federal taxation that we're facing and that we've been facing even greater which will put money back into the hands of Oregonians so that they can spend it where they feel best.
How do we end up cutting the federal budget, especially as the Congress is just on the verge of this $2 trillion aid slash stimulus package to address coronavirus? Our national debt is close to $25 trillion, and our unfunded mandates in Social Security and Medicare are monumental. They're much bigger than that. So how do we go? I'm all for tax cuts, and I think we'll make a more vigorous economy. And I agree with President Trump that he's going to make sure that when we come out of this, and we will come out of this, that America's economy will take off like a rocket. We're ready for the economy to roll. But how do we go about paying the bills? Because we now have a national debt that's going to be close to $25 trillion, and the interest alone on it is huge.
You're right, Lars. We talked about this 6 years ago when I ran for this position, and it's gotten way worse. At that time, it was around $10 trillion, and this scares me. I actually posted about that last night. We're running about $1 trillion a year deficit. Now this puts us at a $3 trillion a year deficit, which is just unheard of. We can't run our household budgets that way. Again, we have to take hard measures. We're going to have to start cutting. And it's going to cost jobs, but we're going to have to start cutting some of these duplicating agencies. We don't have a choice. We have to start doing it. We've got to stop funding every pet project out there in order for incumbents to get elected, for anybody that's running for office to say, hey, I'm going to bring home the bacon so that my state and my constituents can have all of these goodies. That's not the role. That's not our job as senators. And we've got to stop spoiling people.
Joe Ray, real quick, tell people where to find your campaign online so that we can use social distancing and yet you can still get some support in your run against Senator Jeff Merkley.
The website is perkins4ussenate.vote.
Well, good luck to you, Joe Ray, and we'll be glad to talk to you more. And I would love to talk to Jeff Merkley. I'd love to ask him a few questions about this. I'd love to ask him, why does this stimulus package or aid package include $300 million for illegal aliens? Why does it include $35 million for the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts? Why does it include money for juvenile justice? Why does it include money for racial quotas? And to speak to racial equity and all those issues, is it an aid package or is it a liberal Christmas tree that's been laden down with ornaments? And does he agree with people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's unhappy that not enough money is going to non-citizens of this country who are in the United States illegally? It is First Amendment Friday. Your phone calls and emails are welcome at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.
KXL.
Don't say no.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I said shoreline, didn't I? I was corrected. It is North Shore School District. Sorry for the mistake. But North Shore School District, you know, shoreline, North Shore, Lakeshore, the fact is that some of the schools anticipated the problem with China virus very early and they acted. And then you have Democrat governors, and it does matter what party they're with in this case, because Democrat governors stay loyal to the labor unions who support them. And they have said in both Oregon and Washington, we are not going to let kids do distance learning or online learning or connections learning. And why? Because it's a threat to union jobs. And at this point, you are watching in real time as teachers and the unions that represent them and the superintendents and other administrative people in the public schools put your kids' education second and the demands and the desires of unions first. And that is just dead wrong. Glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's go to John in Albany. Hey, John, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Howdy, thanks for taking my call. I just had
John, are you there?
Here real quick.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Are you there? Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, I'm here. What's on your mind?
I have a family member that works for the Oregon Department of Transportation, and I understand earlier this week they received a message from the management or possibly the governor about cleaning their vehicles daily, which is great, but one individual per rig during activities. Yesterday, when driving through the Salem area, I drove through a work zone that had multiple vehicles parked up and down the sides of the shoulders of the road and eight people standing around in a circle within the 6 feet boundary. So my question is what good does it do if everybody takes their own vehicle if we're all going to stand in a circle? Or why are we having people, because there's not enough rigs, take dump trucks, spending taxpayers' money on a dump truck to drive to the work zone instead of just putting people on call and having them come in times of, you know, traffic?
I think that makes a lot more sense. In fact, I could see the best solution, and it probably wouldn't work for every situation, but if people drove their own rig to the work site, you'll rack up a few miles. I mean, unless it's a far distant job. But imagine if you could keep people one to a vehicle in their same rig, and if the state had to pay a few dollars for mileage, it would be worth keeping people from getting sick. But this is one of the problems we've got as a country, John, is that A week ago this Friday, the governor gave up this sort of halfway message about please try to stay distant. And it was such a soft message and so softly delivered that everybody just ignored, not everybody, a lot of people, tens of thousands of people simply ignored it, went on about their weekend plans, went to the beach, went to other parts of Oregon and Washington. They recreated, they congregated. And the problem is, That passes the disease. Now, if you really want to put this thing to a halt, the folks at the University of Washington have said we may lose 81,000 people in 4 months. That is their estimate. It could be double that number, 160,000. And the thing that will make the difference is whether or not people can voluntarily constrain themselves. Now, I know that I don't like the mechanism either of having the government tell people what to do. And I've certainly had plenty of people who say, well, you're violating my constitutional rights. Well, in the name of public health, we do a lot of things that are probably violations of constitutional rights. We tell people we are going to chlorinate your water. We are going to license restaurants. If you want to make a sandwich and sell it, you have to have a state license. I'm sure that people would say, well, I don't want to have to, you know, comply with the government. Well, can we trust you to do it on your own? And the answer to a large extent is some people, having heard about this threat, say, I know what I will do. I will keep myself safe. I'll keep my family safe. And I'll avoid spreading it to my friends and coworkers and strangers I meet on the street. Other people don't appear to have any kind of self-control, including people who literally show up on network television interviews saying, to hell with that. I'm going to go on about my life as usual. And that it's that kind of behavior by people. The guy who goes out and puts his tongue out and licks a whole bunch of product in a store. There was a woman the other day who went over and either coughed or spat on about $37,000 worth of food. I think most of it was meat. And you can imagine how quickly you could ruin that. And the store said, we have no choice but to throw all of this away because there's no way to disinfect it and there's no way to fix this, so we have to throw it away. These are people who are, you know, and I hope judges throw the book at them to say, if during a public health crisis you decide to go out and behave in a way that is almost, it's openly saying, I'm going to go out and break all the rules in a way and scare people that what they get from the grocery store may make them sick or may kill an older person or an immune compromised person, I hope the judges say, we're going to throw the book at you. Everything I've got in the law book that I can throw at you, I'm going to throw at you. But otherwise, I'm just making an appeal to people. Let's do what common sense says. You know, don't wait for the governor to tell you to do it or the mayor to tell you to do it. How about doing it on your own? Can you be sensible on your own?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, if we're going to, the state's going to say, hey, you're going to do X, Y, and Z, they need to practice what they preach and hold their people accountable. And one way to do that would to put people on call, and it would be a cheaper way of than paying them and have them risking contaminating their coworkers.
That's not a bad idea. Thanks very much, John. I appreciate the call. You're listening to First Amendment Friday and the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday!
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS.
That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind.
Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and happy First Amendment Friday. A little update, as we promise you every single hour of every single day, the latest on coronavirus or China virus in the United States. The total number of cases in the U.S. now is 97,000. Nearly 1,500 people have died. And in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon with 414 infection cases, up 98 from yesterday, and 12 people have died. In Washington State, more than 3,200 infected and nearly 150 deaths. And in Idaho, 189 people infected and 3 deaths. And a new University of Washington Medical School study says that China virus is likely to kill 81,000 people in the next 4 months. The best case scenario from those medical researchers is 38,000 nationally. The worst case scenario is more than double at 162,000, but the middle ground estimate of about 81,000 people dead in the next 4 months is the realistic way of looking at what coronavirus is going to do to the whole country. I thought we'd talk with Kevin Miller, who I usually talk to at least once a week. He holds down the fort in the mornings on KIDO in Boise. And Kevin, the state of Idaho stayed remarkably virus-free for the longest time. And even today, your state has a relatively small number of cases, doesn't it?
Well, you're right, Lars, and, you know, our governor has been on top of it. He's been criticized a little from the national media, but that's really the Idaho way, is to let the local municipalities take care of it. Of course, earlier in the week, he did declare a 21-day stay-at-home, which didn't really go over too well here. We have an area called Blaine County where that's where most of the people have been infected. It's the Sun Valley area. It's the bougie area where all the folks come in for Allen and Company, and you have a lot of folks from California, a lot of transients there. That area impacted us so much. I think there's 86 folks infected there now that the governor decided to take action with this mandatory stay at home. Ada County, which is where Boise is, this is where all the population is, we're at about 50-ish. So our medical facilities aren't really near the capabilities of larger places, so we're very concerned about being overwhelmed. Blaine County already, they're at the capacity with their very small hospital there.
No doubt. And it sounds like that Blaine County is much like the United States was to China. That is, it's people flying in from entirely outside the area who are bringing the disease in, and then it spreads in the local population and creates a problem for the whole state.
You know, Lars, you're right about that. The governor was a little concerned. We started to see the community spread cases, and that's when he leapt into action, where he's not mobilized or activated the National Guard, but he's got them on the ready to, in fact, assist local municipalities. I believe, I don't want to say they're on lockdown there, but it's pretty tough to get in and out of Blaine County right now for obvious reasons.
You know, it's funny that I was, you know, I've got a soft spot for Taiwan, and I'm going to talk a bit more about it in the next segment. But the way they've been able to keep, they actually have a lower level of infection than the state of Idaho does at this point. And Taiwan's a country of 23 million. Idaho is less than 2 million people. And if people wonder why, it's because an awful lot of people there voluntarily go along with what they're told is the smart thing to do. And I think we could have less of the governor shutdown orders or stay-at-home orders if people would just listen to what's going on, incorporate the information, and say, okay, I can go through my life that way without behaving in a way that's going to spread it or cause me to get it. Except that there are a certain number of people, and it seems like every part of America, who've decided, I'm not going to be constrained by anything. I'm just going to go about my daily activities the way I always do. And the spring break kids, for example, and they're the ones who create some of the problem. Even in South Korea, one third of the people who are carriers to other people were in the 20 to 29 year age range. Now, I'm not saying all the people that age are a problem, but if you say, no, I'm just going to go on about my life, this is not a big concern for me, you do create a problem for everybody else.
Well, and that's really what alarmed the folks here, where we had people going to the parks prior to the governor's mandatory stay at home, which, by the way, liquor and gun store are places you can still go and buy your guns and get your alcohol. We had people going to the parks and not practicing responsible social distancing, and that caused the folks to be alarmed. And you had areas outside of Boise, Meridian, Nampa, that are very high growth areas where you could still go into a restaurant. But by the way, let me give you props, Lars Larson. You were ahead of the curve on this. We have you on every week on KIDO Talk Radio. And you set me straight on this. You go, look, we live in an earthquake zone here in the Northwest. We have some issues. We've prepped properly. And I go, Lars either really knows what's going on or I was totally clueless. And you're right on. You're right on, sir.
No, I don't think you were clueless, but Kevin, everybody wants their life to go on as normal. And nobody wants, you know, what's happening to the country economically right now. Hospitality is one-tenth of the country. So when you put one-tenth of the country immediately out of work and the potential to have as many as 30 million people out of work, that would still leave about 100 million people working in America and drawing a paycheck. So it's not the whole country, but it's a big enough chunk of the country. It's going to affect everybody. And believe me, the last thing I wanted to see was this kind of thing happen. But I kept looking at the numbers in South Korea and China and Italy, and I kept saying, if it's happening there that way, you can say, well, we're not the Chinese, and we're not the South Koreans either. And then you say, and Northern Italy, they like to kiss each other on the cheek, and they smoke a lot of cigarettes, and they there's a lot of old people in Northern Italy. But hoping that you're going to be different than they are, when I saw that study out of UW today, 81,000 people dead in the next 4 months, that's stunning. And in the state of Washington, they can't even go out and hold a funeral anymore because people won't self-constrain. They won't behave, I guess is the way to put it. I don't want the government telling me how to behave, but if your behavior is putting somebody else's life at risk, the government has a role to step in. If I move to Ada County, Kevin, and I was uphill from you, and I decide to put in a septic system, if my septic system starts leaking down the hill and I say, not a problem for me, that's a problem for Kevin, then I would hope Ada County would come in and say, Lars, you better straighten it out because you can't become a public health hazard.
You're right, and that's really where we are right now, where the governor just issued a couple of executive orders, Governor Little here today, that were, our unemployment rate, we had one of the lowest in the country at 2%, 3%, 2% in Ada County. And all of a sudden, last week, it was over 1,200. This week, 1,200%, sorry. And then this week, it was over almost 1,400%. The unemployment rate has gone up. Governor shifted some emergency money to help. And we're going to get about $1.25 billion from the feds. And he's been on the phone with the president. He has a pretty good relationship with the president trying to get us through this. But he's a shrewd dude when it comes to business. And he understands the need to get these folks through these tough times.
Well, good thing that you do, because you could have Kate Brown or Jay Inslee. They decided that among the essential services in Oregon and Washington is to keep all the marijuana stores open. They are declared as essential services during a nationwide epidemic. Kevin, thanks very much. That's Kevin Miller. You hear him in the morning in Boise, Idaho on KIDO, one of our great affiliate stations. And you're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Voice of the Pacific Northwest, Lars Larson, on FM News 101, KXL. Lars Larson, always welcoming those who disagree.
Please welcome in no particular order.
Naysayers. Welcome, naysayers, to the Lars Larson Show.
And the First Amendment Friday edition of the program, live on the Radio Northwest Network. I made a mention a moment ago to my friend Kevin Miller in Boise, Idaho, that that one of the essential services that has been kept online during this epidemic and people being told to shelter at home, one of the essential services declared by both Governor Jay Inslee and Kate Brown is pot shops, marijuana shops in Oregon and Washington. David, is that what you called in to naysay about today?
It is. As essential places of business, they provide a lot of unique products like RSO, balms, a lot of edibles that give great pain relief and a wide variety of ailments to people. And they're actually a lot better for the body, have a lot less side effects. And then to not mention other jobs like Starbucks, fast food, that we really don't need and are not essential. I got to say I'm a naysayer on that.
David, I always disclose if I have a dog in the fight. Do you have a bud in the bowl?
I don't. I mean, I do.
Do you have a blunt in your pocket? I mean, you smoke pot, right?
Occasionally, I do.
Okay, but you're not in the pot business.
For years.
You're not in the pot business, right?
I've worked in the business for years, but I'm not currently now.
Okay. But I just wanted you to disclose here's the thing. When you compare it to fast food, for an awful lot of people who have to travel in their work or work outside their home, having access to food, I could argue food is a necessity. You're arguing that being able to get intoxicated or to eat edibles or smoke dope is an essential. Tell me why it's essential to human life. Can you tell me somebody who, I mean, if you don't feed somebody, if they don't eat, they will die at some point. They will starve. It'll take a long time. If you don't smoke pot, do you perish?
It's not about smoking pot. It's things like RSO.
What is that?
Intensive pain treatment.
What is RSO?
RSO is short for Rick Simpson oil. Rick Simpson devised a way of concentrating cannabis to provide pain relief for cancer patients, gives them an appetite back, allows them to continue moving, and it doesn't harm their other internal organs as they fight. And yes,
so you would argue that now, would you argue then that it's only essential for those who need it for medical needs, or do you want those shops to stay open for recreational needs as well?
You could go both with the times and people being kind of this cabin fever and the mental status, using it appropriately, like with alcohol, can give people a certain break that they can and they need. And I'm not saying people don't need food. I said fast food and Starbucks. I work. I'm actually a plumber. I do Monday through Friday essential jobs. I am those out in a van driving, but I make my lunch at home. I don't go out unless I have to avoid, you know, people, and I keep my social distance.
That's fair enough. I still don't buy the argument that it's essential, but David, I'm always glad for a good naysayer. Tell you what, we'll send you a challenge coin if we can get your information. Let me go to Randy and Ben. Hey, Randy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, so everything is fair game. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. I just got off the phone with a discussion from a friend who lives in Portland but is currently in Honduras. Sandra works as a missionary and goes down there for a few months and comes home and goes down a few. Anyway, she just returned to Honduras from Nicaragua and was going to fly home. All of the transportation was shut down. So she stuck with her friends. She made a point that they call it curfew down there. Everything is on curfew. And she says the food stores are open one day a week. Pharmacies are open one day a week. Gas stations are open one day a week. And they have water in their house one day a week.
Now, is that the regular practice? Hold on, Randy. Is that the regular practice or is that because of coronavirus?
The water is a regular practice. Everything else is because of coronavirus.
Now, can I ask you something, though? I'm just thinking about this logically. Yeah. Randy, you live in the Northwest. If they opened up the grocery store one day a week, everybody is going to go grocery shopping on that one day. Is that going to satisfy the need to keep? Is that going to satisfy the need to keep people apart? If you cram all your grocery shopping into one day.
No, it's absolutely not. But they don't. They have a lack of food there anyway, and.
So it is part of their regular practice, Randy, and that's what I was trying to get to. If they're doing this in name of coronavirus, it would make more sense to keep the stores open 7 days a week, you know, 10 or 12 hours a day, so people could shop and not be crammed into the stores. It seems like a dumb way to handle things, but it's probably only the beginning of the way dumb things are done in Honduras, because Honduras is a very poor, very corrupt country, right?
Right, and I think that, personally, from things that she said and what I'm seeing, I think they're just flat realizing that they can't afford, they're not going to be able to save people who get coronavirus. And so their way of stopping it is saying, if you don't go out with all these people, maybe you won't get coronavirus, because what America's doing isn't stopping it, and what Italy did didn't stop it. And
actually, Randy, hold on. Italy still has a problem, but did you hear the study I cited from the University of Washington? Now, it's like every other study.
Yes,
it's just a study. Uh-huh. They may be right, but they're saying that social distancing, like what we're doing now, might save 80,000 lives, that without it, we're likely to be at 160,000 deaths. With it, we're at 80,000 deaths. So when you say it's not stopping it, if it saves 80,000 lives, that's not a meaningful difference?
Well, I don't have answers for there. I'm just trying to figure out.
Randy, listen to my question for a moment. The medical authorities are saying if we socially distance as we're doing now, we can get by with only 1,000 people killed. If we don't, the death toll is more likely to be 160,000. Does that make sense to you, that would be the result of social distancing?
It does make sense to me, yes.
Okay, so we are doing things that are slowing it down. We're not stopping it altogether. It got into the country, and it's going to get around the country, and some places will be worse than others. But some of what we're doing is making a difference. So I'm kind of confused as to what the Honduras example is supposed to be, because Honduras is a country, as you said, they don't have a lot of food to begin with, so their grocery store is open one day a week, whether there's coronavirus or not. And if people get sick in Honduras, do they have access to good hospitals with lots of ICU beds?
They do not.
Yeah, so it sounds like they've effectively, and it sounds like their policies of one day a week here and one day a week there, they're going to make everybody go grocery shopping on the same day, which sounds like it's going to spread the disease faster than it would spread in a place like America, where people are trying at least to say, I want to go grocery shopping when there are as few people around as we can possibly imagine. Randy, thanks a lot for the call. It's First Amendment Friday. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show on FM News 101 KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And a great friend of the program is Ben Weingarten, who is a senior contributor at The Federalist and senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research and the author of the new book, American Ingrate. Yes, we have talked about Ilhan Omar and the progressive Islamist takeover of the Democrat Party. Ben, good to have you back.
Lars, it's always a pleasure, and thanks so much for that kind introduction.
Well, based on the piece you just wrote for The Federalist, it seems, I think a lot of us are coming to this conclusion, but you've really put it the best, that coronavirus says we've got to change the way America operates, both on a government level and on a personal level.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, we've seen that the left is trying to use this crisis to impose their radical and revolutionary agenda at a minimum temporarily, and then use those temporary measures to create a wedge such that they can make them permanent down the road. But what I argue in this article is that in this hysteria, the noise that's been generated over this Chinese coronavirus crisis, there are important signals that America ought to look to in terms of major changes we ought to make, both in terms of national security and foreign policy and domestic policy as well. On the national security and foreign policy side, starting with viewing communist China as a global menace and preventing sort of the root causes that led us to a situation where an illness that started in Wuhan could lead to the shutdown of the entire American economy with all these devastating knock-on impacts, all the way to on the domestic side, needing to get our fiscal house in order so that a shock to the system like this doesn't completely devastate our people, our nation, and by the way, lead to China ending up in potentially an even more favorable position when we come out the other side of this.
You know, as you and I are talking about this, the president just finished signing this, whatever you want to call it, stimulus bill, relief package, whatever it is. It's $2 trillion to a country that's coming very close to $25 trillion in real hard debts and tens of trillions of dollars in debts that I guess you call them the money we haven't set aside for Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and a whole bunch of other obligations. I mean, this is a I don't know that you can say it's unnecessary, but the way they framed this thing, where they threw in money for the Kennedy Center and money for illegal aliens and tried to get abortion and get rid of the Hyde Amendment in it, instead of saying we have an emergency we hope will be short term, we need to target some aid to people, tens of millions of Americans who are going to find themselves on the unemployment line if we are allowed to stand in lines these days, and we need to fix that or help that out for a short period of time. Instead, it became this giant Christmas tree. Is anybody getting the message?
Yeah, instead, this ended up a piece of swamp legislation with a little bit of so-called relief at the back end of it. And it demonstrates, and this is one of the things that I argue in this piece, that Republicans need to understand the stakes, that in a crisis like this, yes, Democrats are absolutely going to use every shameful and cynical measure possible to impose the ultimate agenda that they wish to achieve. My argument would be, yes, there needs to be a form of targeted relief, in particular because in this case, unlike during the financial crisis, here we've had the government tell businesses, big and small, to shut down. This isn't a bailout born of private enterprise companies making bad decisions and then not having to deal with the consequences of it. In this case, this was sort of government breaking the knees of the American economy and then saying, we're going to pay for your treatment. But all of that said, the interest expense alone on the U.S. national debt, it was already trending within the next few years to be the greatest budget item outside of those entitlement items of the budget that you mentioned. The fact that just servicing our debt is going to become such a massive part of our budget, and that's before we even blow out all of our budgets with these multi-trillion dollar bills, is astounding. I mean, just to put it in context in terms of absolute size, last I checked, the debt, U.S. debt held by China was something like around $1 trillion. So yep, with the amount of money in these bills, we could have extinguished that debt held by China. Instead, we're going to go into further debt, and China's probably going to hold a chunk of it.
You know, it's funny, Ben, that I've seen people say, well, it's those evil corporations that shipped, say, N95 mask making off to China, along with tennis shoes and cell phones and everything else. And I've said to people, I think it's more regulatory nonsense at home. In other words, we created part of the problem. Sure, it was attractive to use cheap Chinese labor and massive factories, but you made it really hard to make things in America. And that is probably the bigger problem than the attractiveness of cheap wages in China. And how else do we get all these manufacturing things back home when American companies say, you've made it really tough for us to make things in America?
Yeah, the business tax climate alone has made America a very unattractive place relative to other parts of the world to do business. And capital goes where it is treated the best, and that includes both employees as well as the money itself. And I think you're absolutely right. It has become so much more attractive on a purely economic basis to do business with China because we've created a business climate that is so hyper-regulated and so overtaxed that people in business make a cold, hard calculation of why would I do business here when it's so much cheaper elsewhere. That's why I think one of the real stimuli that should have come out of one of these bills, and maybe it'll come out of a future one, is freeing up our economy so that when we do emerge from this crisis, we not only return to the level of economic growth that we had, but we actually accelerate our growth. This underscores the importance of doing that.
No, and I would love to see that. The other piece of this is a little more personal. And, Ben, I think I might have shared this with you. I was born in Taiwan. I'm an American citizen born to American parents, but my dad was in the military. And they have handled this amazingly well. I think they're still below 200 total cases in a country of 23 million. They've done amazingly well. If only New York and Seattle and Los Angeles and New Orleans could have done the same. And part of it, they say, is because the government has some good programs that they put in place after SARS. So they actually did prepare. I mean, they're handing out 11 million masks a day to a population of 23 million. So that's a piece of it. But some of it is people who are responsible, that when the government says, hey, we've got this disease and we can't spread it around, people actually say, oh, well, then I don't have to go out to dinner tonight. I don't have to go out to the movies. I don't have to go to the beach. And they do it on their own. And because they do it on their own, the government gives them a lot more latitude to decide what's essential and what's not. Do you know, in my neck of the woods, there are literally people arguing about, well, is your business essential or not? You know, and I got one email from a landscape company, and I said, well, if you're out trimming hedges or mowing lawns, that sounds like one of the most solitary activities you can do. You should be able to do that. Well, we've been deemed non-essential, but marijuana shops are deemed essential. So the government is deciding for the citizens what's essential instead of trusting them to decide on their own, because in some cases, when you let them decide on their own, 2 million spring breakers all go to Miami.
Yeah, it's you make a number of great points there, and I just add one more in particular with respect to Taiwan, which is that of all places in the world, Taiwan perfectly understands the nature of the Chinese Communist Party, the way that a disease like this might metastasize, and I think we should always look to them when there's any crisis concerning China. To provide a signpost for how we might best react. And I'll make one more point, which is that I talked about the fact that the metastasization of the coronavirus is a perfect example of the downsides of globalism. Merely by asking the rhetorical question, does anyone believe that America would have been hit as hard as it has been by the coronavirus if China were not so deeply integrated into the global political and economic architecture, and were we not so lax in terms of our border control?
Absolutely right. Ben Weingarten is a senior contributor at The Federalist. He's the author most recently of American Ingrate, Ilhan Omar, and the Progressive Islamist Takeover of the Democrat Party. Ben, thank you very much. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Everybody knows Lars loves guns.
I'm a citizen with a constitutional right to bear arms.
And he also loves the Second Amendment. Let's face it, America isn't America without guns.
All right, that does it. It's time to bring out the big guns.
Protecting your right to bear arms every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, I have a little bit of good news for you, and that is that an initiative petition, which was proposed to be on the ballot this November in the state of Oregon, is not going to make the ballot. The organizers for IP40 said, yeah, it looks like we won't be able to gather the signatures in large part, well, both because people understand it's a foolish idea, but also because of coronavirus. Dan Mitchell joins me now from Sporting Systems in Washington State. Dan, do you have some good news for us on the Second Amendment front from the Evergreen State?
Yes. About an hour ago, a letter was sent to the governor's office from 45 state legislators and 16 sheriffs and police chiefs around the state are requesting that Governor Inslee lists firearms retailers, ammunition manufacturers, and such as essential businesses.
Good.
So a late night effort on Monday when he made the announcement shutting down the state, Senator Wilson down here in 17th District jumped on this and ran with it late at night we were making phone calls to sheriffs on their personal phones at, you know, late at night, and they were all lining up to sign this letter. So
I want to ask you, about something else that comes in that same vein, because I know that there are people out there who don't know anything about the Second Amendment. There are a lot of those people. But then they express amazement that along with toilet paper and dry goods, when people are stocking up, they also buy firearms and they buy bullets. And they say, why would you need those things? And I say, well, my answer to them is, well, have you noticed that a number of places in both Oregon and Washington have been cutting loose criminals from jail, saying, well, we're just going to release them rather than have them get coronavirus while in custody. And there are other folks, defense attorneys in the ACLU, who even want to cut loose convicted criminals from prison, but they want to cut people loose from jail. And if you dump a whole bunch of criminals on the streets, and then you tell the police, as the police have been told in so many places, not only in the Northwest, but around America, we're going to stop making arrests for all but the most serious crimes. What do you expect those criminals to do? They've been told you're getting out early. Oh, and by the way, the police won't be arresting people for many of the things they used to arrest them for. I think that honest, law-abiding citizens have a reason to be concerned that they need to provide for their own security. And if they can't go to a gun store, if they can't buy bullets, and if they can't exercise their rights, like the city of Edmonds was trying to have the authority to take away people's rights, that's a real concern about personal security. The police, God bless them, but the police have been told by their political masters, don't enforce the law, and the jails have been told, cut loose as many people as you can. What do we think the natural result of those two policies is going to be?
Hey, you're exactly right. People want the ability to defend themselves. And when the state hampers law enforcement's ability to provide adequate public safety, people's natural primal desire to survive comes into play. And so we have a tremendous number of new firearms owners across the country now. Probably three quarters of the purchasers that have been in our stores the past few weeks have been new gun buyers. And often they're very, very surprised at, you know, how long it's going to take for them to get this firearm because of all of the laws that are in place on delaying their rights. But, you know, the fact is we're being deemed essential by the law enforcement and the legislative community. Homeland Security has done the same thing. It should be posted up here later today. So this isn't just here, this is nationwide. When this went down, Linda got on the phone and got in touch with the White House along with NSSF and the Second Amendment Foundation. They got the federal people looking at this and saying, well, this needs to be equal for everybody, not just here in Washington, not just in Oregon, but everywhere. We all deserve the same civil rights and the same protections of those rights, especially in a time when our security is threatened.
Well, you know, the other day I talked to some folks I've been doing business with for 20 years at Northwest Armory. So I have a relationship with them, both business and personal.